The challenge is it's kind of high risk, high reward up here. And here's what I mean by that. So I throw out a question. They might have a right answer, a factual answer, or they might have a wrong answer that's opinion or it's not factual. How do I handle that? Okay. So I'm asking a question, and then I get a response over here. I say, okay, let's hear from someone else. Okay, let's hear from someone else. I kind of fish around until I get the right answer, right? If I do that several times and no one gives me the right answer, then I just slide over here and I take care of it. I clean it up. Does that make sense? Now, if I ask the question and they give me the right answer, that's the high reward. Because why? Then what can I do? Oh, Sally, that's great. Did you hear what Sally said? Sally, say that again so we can all hear it. What was that? Now what am I doing? Affirming, encouraging, right? And then, oh, yeah, I got it. And I want to do that. I really do. Because they really do know a lot of this stuff. And I just want to help them, A, think it through. Look, at the end of the day, I don't want my kids to walk away saying, I choose to teach abstinence because my teacher told me to choose abstinence. What do I want them to say? I choose abstinence because I figured it out. I thought through it. And I came to the conclusion that this is really going to be good for me. Does that make sense? So what I want to do, what I'm doing up here, is I'm really kind of working that process. Now, if I'm just doing this, if I'm doing all the talking, are they getting it? Maybe or maybe not. So what this has is a built-in diagnostic element, right? I can evaluate where I'm at with them. If I'm asking them questions, I can get a really good sense of where they're at. They're saying things are completely off the wall. We need to go over chapter one again. They're not getting it. Exactly. It does take time. You're exactly right. That's the difficulty of this, is it takes time. To teach it well takes time. You're absolutely right. Because I can plow through stuff, and if I'm up against the clock, I have to, but it's not ideal. It's not ideal. It's best for me to take time to work through it. You'll find in the workbooks it's all questions. Questions punctuated with facts. Okay? Because I'm trying to work the material. I want to do for it. I want to do those things with them. I want them to read it. I want them to say it. I want them to write it. I want them to hear it. I want them to do all of those things. And then I want them to engage in the activities. Five things, actually. So all of those things are going to be really, really helpful and important in getting them to embrace the message. And I've had many educators tell me that, oh, the books, all you have to do is read the question. You don't even have to have a training. You go through the workbook, you just read the questions in class. It kind of is self-propelling that way because it's a lot of questions. And because they're objective questions, it doesn't back you into a corner. See, subjective questions leave you in a very difficult position. And you'll see what I mean, an example. So here, let's get some examples of this. So here's an example, fact-based question. Why is saving sex from marriage the safest, healthiest lifestyle? Do you see how the question assumes the fact? Does that make sense? Let's talk about why that is. What are some of the reasons that that is true? It is true. Let's talk about what some of the reasons are why it's true. Here, I'm just going to say it, and I will say this frequently throughout the course of the program. Saving sex from marriage is the safest, healthiest lifestyle. I'm just going to get that out there. So these are some of my punctuation points. I'll say that. We're having a conversation, and once in a while I come over here. Here's the trick with inductive subjective. And I've seen this in some programs. So you're talking about teen pregnancy, you're talking about how hard it is, and the babies, and the thinking over, and all of that, and you say, do you really think that you're ready to handle having a baby? Now what can they say? Yes. Now where are you? No, you're not. You're only 14. You see what I see? This sets you up for an argument. Now, if I say, do you think that you're ready to take care of a baby? And they say yes, are they wrong? They're not wrong. Because what did I ask them? I asked them what they thought. So if I'm asking subjective questions, I'm stuck. I got nowhere to go now. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So important. Let me give you one practical illustration of how this works out really well. I had a really cool opportunity to be on the Joy Behar show years ago when she had a show. And I was on there with, what was her name? Naomi Wolf.
Naomi Wolf was Al Gore's advisor when he was running for president, noted feminist. You probably heard of Naomi Wolf. Well, we were sitting there. It was Joy was here, Naomi Wolf was here, and I was here. And Naomi Wolf goes like this. She goes, I just think it's really hypocritical, talking about subjective now. She said, I think it's really hypocritical for us to be telling kids to do things that we didn't do. I mean, we didn't wait. How can we tell our kids to wait? I didn't wait. Did you wait, Scott? And I'm sitting there on television. And she turns to me and says, did you wait? And I'm like, dip, 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 dip. So it's kind of, I was just kind of in an awkward sort of position. So I said, it doesn't matter if I waited or I didn't wait. It's not about my subjective experience. We have an obligation to teach kids what the factual, objective truth is, and that is saving sex until marriage is the best choice, regardless of what you or I did. That's the answer. As we left, we were going down the elevator. We're in New York at CNN Tower. We're going down the elevator, just her and me in the elevator. And I turned to her and I said, by the way, I did wait. She goes, well, why didn't you say that? Why didn't I say it? Because as she asked me the question and I thought of the fact that I'm on television, I'm thinking to myself, there's a lot of parents watching right now who what? Who didn't wait. And I can't validate the premise of her statement, which is what? Only people who waited can talk to their kids, right? So if I had said, yes, I waited, I would have validated her false premise. I can't do that. So even though I did wait, it doesn't matter that I waited or that I didn't wait. And I mean that. So parents listening, don't worry about the fact that you didn't wait. You still need to communicate this to your... It's so important. This is why these categories are important to understand and that we know what we're doing and what we're saying at that time because we can get ourselves in some sticky situations. So after that, I was like, I'm glad I answered that way because my first instinct would be to say, well, yes, as a matter of fact, I did. Thanks for asking. I did wait. But that would have been the wrong answer. It wouldn't have been helpful to a lot of parents out there who would have then said what? Too bad I didn't wait. Sure, it would be good to talk to my kids about this, but I guess I can't do it. I'm not like that guy.
Kids ask all the time in the classroom.
They do.
And that's my analogy that I use in the hospital. One, it doesn't matter what I do.
Yeah.
Am I a bad person if I burn myself on the stove and I tell you not to touch it?
Yep.
And so that's,
That's a good way to handle it. And I encourage, I mean, look, do whatever you want to do. I'm not telling you what to do. But I do encourage that you do, if you didn't wait, because they're really wondering, you know, and there is an air of inauthenticity to just say, you know, it doesn't matter. Well, it doesn't, but it kind of does, too, because of this. So what I encourage people, you know, particularly if you're the classroom educator, I do encourage you just to be honest and say, look, the reason why I'm teaching this is because I didn't have this when I was your age, and I wish I waited. I didn't. I wish I did. And this is why I'm teaching it to you, is because I don't want you to experience what I went. So that's the way I encourage people to handle it. Yeah. All right. So do you think, and then this one, do you think that you're mature enough to have sex? Is that a problematic? In fact, this one's really weird because this one really, the whole maturity thing, there's already the impression out there that you should wait to have sex until you're mature. So that kids who are having sex apparently are the mature ones, and the ones exercising self-control and self-discipline are too immature. It's just completely backwards from what the reality is. But I want to be very careful with subjective questions. You can see why. And then I'm going to completely avoid deductive subjective, right? Because if I can say you are too young to have sex, then Planned Parenthood comes right in behind me and says what? You are not too young to have sex. Just make sure you use a condom because you don't want the consequences. See? So I want to stay away from the subjective stuff. And again, who am I to say? Who am I to say? I was going to talk radio show with a guy from the Chicago Tribune, Eric Zorn. He's a columnist with the Tribune. And he says, and he goes, so you're saying two people in the city of Chicago, 25 years old, if they're not married, they can't have sex. That's what you're saying. Now, how would you answer that? I'll be Eric Zorn, you be me. You're saying two people 25 years old in the city of Chicago, if they're not married, they can't have sex. That's what you're saying.
Well, of course they can. They're 25. They can do what they want.
So what are you saying? Exactly. I said, who made me the sex police? Right? That's the way I answered. Who made me the sex police? My job isn't going around the country and tell people who can and can't have sex. Two people in the city of Chicago, 25 years old, can have sex with every other person in the city of Chicago who is of age and consents to it. Right? What am I saying? The safest, healthiest choice is to save sexual activity for a marriage relationship. Do they have to do that? Absolutely not. They can do whatever they want. I'm not telling 25-year-olds what to do. Am I telling 15-year-olds what to do? We're not. Right? But to say to kids, I'm not here to tell you what to do, is not to say, look, kids, there's lots of different choices out there, and I'm here to affirm you in whatever you choose. I'm not saying that. There is a safest, healthiest choice, and I'm going to do my very best to communicate that to you. Because I think you'll see very clearly, but at the end of the day, it's up to you. You see, I sort of see my job as being like a lawyer before a jury, right? I can only use the facts to clearly argue my case. And I hope if I've done my job well, they'll be like, ding, I get it. Where do I sign? I'm in. Because you presented a clear and compelling rationale. That's why our mission statement says, every teenager in the country should have the opportunity to hear what? A clearly reasoned, positive presentation on the benefits of abstinence. That's what I think our job is. Our job is to clearly, in an unmuddled way, communicate. Saving all sex for marriage is objectively, without argument, your best choice. Do whatever you want. Do whatever you want. But know what the facts are. Okay. So this is a framework that I think can be helpful for you in understanding these categories and understands how all of our material is written and developed. All right, I thought I would throw in these CDC guidelines here just to let you see in terms of objective information. This is the CDC guidelines for school health. I'll just let you read. I won't read all this. Look who's behind this. Look who says this. This is everybody. This is everybody says this. Well, what does everybody say? I'm going to tell you what, most people don't know this. I think this is incredible. The Centers for Disease Control says that schools should teach their kids to abstain from sexual intercourse until they're ready to enter into a mutually monogamous relationship within the context of marriage. That's what the CDC says. You should abstain until marriage. I think that's very clear. Now, what if they're already sexually active? Now, what does the CDC say? What does it say that we should tell sexually active kids? This says, if they're not, let's see, people who have not engaged in sexual intercourse. What do you think it says for students who have engaged in sexual intercourse? Any ideas? Let's see what the CDC says. Number two, for young people who have engaged in sexual intercourse, what should they do? Stop it. I love that. It doesn't say give them condoms. It says tell them to stop. Until when? They should stop until they're married. That's CDC. That's there, yes. Yes. Right. I testified against the Illinois sex ed law. I was at the, I testified before the House Committee and the Senate Committee, and the House Committee, I said, look, we are following, our program is following the guidelines from the Centers for Disease Control. what guidelines are you using to implement this new policy? What's your basis of rationale? You know, they don't give me any answer. They're just like, next. They just don't even respond. So really, really incredible. Now, here's where it gets weird. So you know they're not going to stop here. I'm so happy and so proud of them for numbers 1 and 2, but then 3, forget about it. Watch what happens. This is really interesting. I want you to see the contradiction. Despite all efforts, some people aren't going to listen to you. So you should tell them something else. Okay, so the big fallacy, first of all, I'm going to put that away. I think one of the greatest fallacies about comprehensive sex ed is that they're not going to, first of all, which is the superior message? Save sex for marriage or have sex using contraception? Saving sex for marriage is factually, objectively, a superior message in terms of avoiding all the different risks and consequences, right? They're not similar things, they're distinct things. So what we're constantly told is they're not going to listen to the superior message, therefore what? You need to give them an inferior message. Because they'll listen to that. Why they won't listen to the better message but will listen to the lesser message, I've never understood the rationale, but that's what the CDC says. Watch. Despite all efforts, some people are not going to listen to you. Therefore, school systems in consultation with parents and health officials should provide AIDS education programs that address preventative, including the following. Now watch this. You should teach your kids to avoid sexual intercourse with anyone who is known to be infected. They're talking about HIV now. So you shouldn't have sex with anybody who knows they're infected with HIV. Okay? Or watch this. Or you shouldn't also have sex with anybody who's at risk of being infected with HIV. Oh. Or you shouldn't have sex with anybody whose HIV infection isn't known. Oh! What? Who's left? You can't have sex with someone who has HIV. You can't have sex with someone who might get HIV. And you can't have sex with someone who doesn't know if they have HIV. I don't know what's left. And then I love this. And then make sure to use a latex condom. I'm just like, what? So, anyway, the rest of this is just use a clean needle, whatever. All right, how's my time? All right, let me just finish this up real quick. So benefits of abstinence for teen, not just avoiding problems. We're talking about learning self-discipline, developing character, avoiding other risk behaviors. And I love this one. I spent a lot of time emphasizing this one, increasing academic achievement. We've got information in your folders there from the Department of Health and Human Services that shows a direct correlation between sexually active teens and deteriorating grades. This is really good if you're trying to go to your local school to talk to them. This isn't some tangential program off to the side that may or may not concern them. This is at the core of their educational success. You want to see increased test scores. You want to see increased graduation rates. Bring our program in. We think it will make a big difference in increasing the academics in your learning environment, in your school. So this is really, really important. The sheet in your folder is from the Department of Health and Human Services. I think it's very clear. I had research prior to that from the Heritage Foundation, which then people say, oh, that's the Heritage Foundation. But they can't say, oh, that's HHS. So I've got the HHS form in their sheet in there for you as well. Are all teens equally vulnerable? Are there reliable protective factors? University of Maryland analysis came up with protective factors for teens. These are things that will help teens not engage in risk behaviors, particularly sexual activity. Do they have a close relationship with parents? And this is, I use this more for my parents' seminars, but I just thought I'd share it with you. Clear religious beliefs, does not work too much, gets good grades, pledge to save sex for marriage. So be positive. Don't use a no approach. Use a yes approach. How is this possible? And I already did this one. Encourage over discourage. Okay. Where? Okay. Yeah, and I don't do like a PowerPoint handout because it can just be so much paper that you're probably just going to toss in the garbage. That's why I give you a free workbook because a lot of the things I'm saying are in the workbook, and it's better to have a workbook than a bunch of paper from a conference that you're just going to toss afterwards. So, and it's a lot for me to print off all that stuff and then haul it and forget about it. All right. Just a quick distinction because people are like, what's the difference? So just very quickly, I did this one with A.C. Green from the NBA, champion with the three-time champion with the L.A. Lakers. In fact, ESPN just did a nice little eight-minute documentary on him. I hate the name of it. Just came out a couple weeks ago. It says it's called Iron Virgin. Those two words just don't go together. I'm sorry. Iron Virgin. But it's a nice documentary. It's an eight-minute thing with a lot of the stars from the day, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and some of those guys just saying, yeah, we play with him. The guy's awesome. And he believes what he says what he believes. He's helping kids. He's wonderful. And it's really, really cool. So especially if you're using Game Plan, you should check that out. Google it. So Game Plan follows the story of A.C. Green, who was a champion, with three-time champion of the L.A. Lakers, but really known for his commitment to abstinence. He made it very public that he wasn't going to have sex until he got married, and so we kind of worked with him and built this book around his story. Okay. And then Quest is kind of a journey theme with the eight distinct stories, as I said. Oh my goodness, chapter eight is my favorite in all of the workbooks. If you have a chance, oh, actually, you can go online. All of our workbooks you can see in their entirety online at amresources.org, amresources.org. You can go there and read Chapter 8 of Quest. I want to encourage you, that's your homework. I want to encourage you to read Chapter 8 of Quest. It's my favorite chapter in all the workbooks, and here's why. It's a true story. So each chapter in Quest begins and ends with a story, but this story was too big. I didn't know what to do with it. Most people I asked for a story, I said, give me just a page or two, maximum, I'll edit it down. This couple gave me an eight-page story. I couldn't edit it down. It was all too much good stuff. So I didn't know what to do with it. I was piloting this Quest program, as I told you, at an all-African-American school in Chicago. I didn't know what to do with this story. It was too big. I told these kids, I'm just going to read you this story. I don't know what else to do. I'm just going to read it to you because I'm piloting. I need to try this out. I read the story of these kids with some questions sprinkled throughout. At the end of the story, this class was cheering and clapping like I've never seen. Woo! Okay, it's an abstinence lesson, people. And they're cheering and clapping. So I was going from classroom to classroom, piloting my stuff, and I was doing different material with every class because I'm trying to see what works best. I want to get through as much different material as possible, but I thought, I got to burn a class. I got to do that again because I don't know what was up. That was weird. I've never had that kind of a response. I'm going to try it again. So I go to the next class. I say, hey, I'm going to read you a story. This class, as I finished, cheering, clapping, boys standing. Think of this. A standing ovation from eighth grade boys to a story on abstinence. Oh my goodness. It was great. And in fact, the first class, what they said was, I remember them saying this, could we get a copy of that? I said, well, it's going to be in this book that I'm writing. I'm writing a book called Quest. It's going to be in the book if it kind of works. I said, maybe when I'm done with the books, I can give you a copy of the book. When's it going to be done? I said, well, hurry up and finish. I'm not making this up. I am not making this up. This is what the kids told me, to hurry up and finish the book because they wanted a copy of it. I'm telling you, it blew me away. I got in the car, I go, Carrie, hey, guess what? This is my wife, by the way, Carrie Wave. I didn't even introduce my lovely wife back here. So I called him. I'm telling him, I'm calling, hey, guess what just happened? Guess what just happened? Guess what just happened? Because I've taught abstinence a lot. I have never had a risk. Here's the beautiful thing about it. There's nothing in that chapter about pregnancy or disease or suffering. It's a beautiful story of I love you so much, I wouldn't think about doing anything until we get married. Oh, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. And so that's chapter 8, most distinctive. It really pulls everything together, that final chapter of Quest. You can read it online. Okay, we went over some of Aspire, Marriage Throughout, full PowerPoint. Outdoor themes. This one includes more on alcohol, tobacco, and other drugs. More information on pornography and breaking free. Does not yet have a PowerPoint. So there's slight differences among the program, but I will say this. All of my curriculum, all of my programs have the same fundamental message. They just use different illustrations and different stories. The grades aren't critical. Like, we're not there. They kind of mix it up and do it in different order. It's totally fine. They're not built, like, they're not sequential. You can mix them up. I just try to put them in order of what seemed best in terms of the age levels. Like, this one has a little bit more mature information material in it, but totally fine however you want to do that, okay? All right, let's take a little break before our final session, and the final session is going to be on the grand vision that I want to share with you, and I really want your feedback on that. I just want to have kind of a brainstorming session with you on where we should be going as a movement. So let's take maybe just a 10-minute break and then come back and we'll do our final session. Okay, really quickly, I thought I'd just mention something about the Excel program. So I wrote this one particularly for churches and Christian schools. Now, is there a difference between how you present this message in a public school and a Christian school? I would say yes. I would say yes, there is a difference. Why? Yeah, I think that's exactly it. And so clearly when we're teaching in a public school, we're leaving some stuff out. Right? We're leaving. It's a censored version. In fact, these two books are companions in that. Excel was written first, and then it was censored for public schools. Because we live in America where we have free speech, which means you can't say certain things in a public school. So this one is built around the Joseph narrative in Genesis 39, and in this one, there's no Joseph. So that's the difference between the two. But I came up with, before I wrote Excel, I came up with six key biblical principles that I wanted, that I felt like should be used for this. Number one, that it should be thoroughly biblical, that it should be factual, that it should be inspirational, it should be practical, it should be appropriate for use in a Christian school, and it should be evangelical in the sense of having a clear gospel presentation in it. And so then I kind of go through, well, what does it mean to be biblical? Does it mean just taking a public school program and adding all the verses we can find to go with it? I don't think that's it. I'm a firm believer in exegesis versus eisegesis. Do you know those terms? Exegesis, exodus, out of, an exit sign. So exegesis is what you take out of the text. It comes out of the text. Eisegesis, the prefix eis, is into. So what's eisegesis? That's when I read into the text. I have an idea, and then I look around for a Bible verse I could put my idea into. So we don't want to do eisegesis, we want to do exegesis. What does Scripture actually say? What is the text? So I want a biblical program that is exegetical. And so that's what that is. It is studying Scripture in its context. So what this does is it takes every chapter in this workbook, takes a section of the Joseph narrative, and it walks through the beginning in Genesis 37. He's 17 years old. He's a teenager with a dream. You're a teenager. What are your dreams? What has God laid on your heart? It goes all the way through to chapter 8, which is the last chapter of the book of Genesis, where he dies. Life is short. Live well. And you don't have very long on this earth. And how are you going to spend your days here? And so that's how we... all right. So I just want to do a quick overview of what that is. I would highly recommend that one if you're going to be working primarily with a church or a Christian school rather than the other one. Okay. Now we come to the grand vision. And I wanted to, as I said, brainstorm some thoughts with you. And first of all, I just wanted to start off talking about the different program applications, because there are many different applications for what we're talking about. Public schools, Catholic schools, Christian schools, homeschool groups, churches and youth retreats, parents' meetings, and then, of course, in-center counseling. This session actually started out to be, and as I was preparing to be here, I started to prepare a session here on how to do this in-center counseling, as opposed to out in public schools and Christian schools and churches and so forth. And as I was working on it, it occurred to me, I don't do in-center counseling. It would be kind of funny for me to tell you how to do that, since you probably do that better than I do. So I think I came up with something that could be really helpful, but then I thought, you know what, you could probably teach that better than I could. All I would say is that I think our material works well in a center environment. We have some centers. I work very closely with Augusta Care in Augusta, Georgia. Susan Swanson's terrific. We've worked very closely together for years. I'm usually down there once or twice a year doing trainings and workshops and speaking for her. And they use Aspire as a marriage counseling class, and they'll do like 8 classes on like a Tuesday night, and then you come and you get dollars to the, you know, the baby store for the diapers and the clothes and all that kind of stuff. And they will use the Aspire program, and they will walk the clients through the Aspire program. So there's different ways to do that, and there's different people that have done that and done that well. I thought rather I would talk about this bigger vision and picture that I wanted to kick around with you, brainstorming session. And that, so let's just start off with, so these are just kind of some random notes. I have never presented this, like I say, publicly. I just, some things that I want your feedback on. Why is it that you as a center are interested in teaching abstinence? Give me some ideas. Yeah.
So I think that's really important that they understand that even if they have a child, they can still live this.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Good. What's your center's mission? Oh, go ahead. Yes.
Many times I would like to put you out of business if that's okay with you.
Yes.
With that, you know, yeah. And they're not hearing it anywhere else.
And they're not hearing it anywhere else. Yeah, exactly. Good. Good. All right.
And most of the kids in foster care feel like they have no worth. And when with absence, you can share that they are worth every bit of weight and all that. So.
Yeah. Good, good. All right. What is your center's mission? Do you know your center's mission statement? You have one, I'm sure. What is it? Do you know what it is? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's okay. No, I don't mean to put you on the spot. I'm just asking if you don't have to say it to me. I'm just wondering. I don't know. I mean, this is, like I said, this is a brainstorming session. I'm wondering, okay, what is the purpose of your center? What's the big picture? What are you trying to accomplish?
Well, for all of us, you know, we would have to say that a large portion of that revolves around the unplanned pregnancy.
Yes. Right, exactly. So would you say that you are, as a center, you are problem-focused or solutions-focused? Yeah, good, okay. So it's a gospel beacon, right? Yeah, good, very good. All right, so these are just things I want us to be thinking about. What are we trying to do? Are we problem-focused or solution-focused? And what does solution-focused center look like? Sue Ann already anticipated where I'm going with this. I kind of got into this line of thinking. I was doing an interview with Eric Metaxas on the radio, and you know, we were discussing the Planned Parenthood thing, and we were going back and forth. His wife runs a pregnancy care center that I have visited in New York City in Manhattan called Avail. And at the end of the hour-long interview that I was on his program, I said, by the way, Eric, tell your wife I'm trying to put her out of business. Right? And so that's what really kind of got me thinking. He laughed, said, oh, that's a great way to end the interview. You know, thanks for coming on. And so I'm just thinking, right? I'm just thinking. What are we doing? What are we doing? Are we responding to problems? Are we reactive or proactive? And I think of the typical PCC staffing model, right? So here's the way I tend to see it. So the typical model that I, as I travel around the country, and I'll tell you, one of the things I said to Eric on the program is, I said, one of the joys of my life is that I get to travel around the country and meet the most wonderful people in the world at the pregnancy care centers. I do. I've been to so many wonderful pregnancy care centers around the country. And I get to go in and see the ultrasound room and the baby gift room and all the different things, and the counseling sessions, and meet the staff. And I love doing that. Wonderful people. But the typical model as I see it is that we'll have maybe four or five people at the center who run the center, and then we'll hire maybe like one person to go out and do abstinence. You know, and it's like the abstinence director, and that person will go out and do presentations in local schools. Does this sound familiar? Am I kind of getting it? So this is sort of what I'm thinking about. So the typical model is you've got, you know, some people, a group of people, could be 2, 3, 4, 6, larger pregnancy center, maybe 8 or 10. And then maybe if we've got enough resources, we'll hire, after we've got the center staff, we'll maybe then hire someone to go out into the community and do presentations at local churches and schools. That, I think, is the fairly typical model that I see as I travel around. Here's my thought, and I'm just thinking, what if every PCC inverted that model? What if instead of most people in the center responding to people who come to us, we had one person in the center and sent everybody else out to schools and churches with a message of prevention, right? Concept car. I saw something the other day that I showed my daughter and my son. It was the coolest Mercedes-Benz I've ever seen. Someone had it on their LinkedIn. I was like, oh, look at this picture. And it was like this really long, red, super cool looking. And I showed this to my daughter, and she's like, Dad, that's a concept car. It's not real. I mean, they just make those for car shows. Nobody's going to buy that car. And I was thinking, okay, so a concept car. So in other words, a concept car is something where they just push themselves, right? Apparently. I don't know how this works. But apparently, so I looked at some other concept cars, and there's just like these really far out, crazy ideas. What's our concept car? What's our sort of crazy, push-the-limits thinking about where we should be going as a movement? Maybe it's not possible, but I guess I'm just stretching. How far up the river can we go? Is our vision to be or not to be? I think to not to be is the bigger vision. What do I mean by that? That's the bigger vision, right? So I guess what I'm thinking is, could we be more aggressive? Are we trying to reduce abortions? Is our goal, do we tend to focus on reducing abortions or reducing non-marital pregnancies? And which of these should we pursue and why? Should your center be working to reduce abortions or to be working to reduce non-marital pregnancies? That's kind of a tough one, isn't it?
Marital pregnancies, you would automatically reduce abortion because if women have the support of a good, healthy marriage, they most likely would carry.
I believe that's true, and I don't believe the opposite is true. If I'm focusing on reducing abortions, I don't think it necessarily follows that reducing non-marital pregnancies occurs. But I think the other way does. I think if I focus on reducing non-marital pregnancies, abortions are reduced as well. I'm just thinking, right? I'm just wanting to brainstorm with you some of these things. And should we maybe redeploy more resources to the front lines is what I'm sort of wondering. To go on the offensive. To pursue victory. Do we even think in terms of victory? Or do we live in a perpetual struggle with no hope of victory? Does that make sense what I'm saying? Like, do we even think conceptually of a time when a pregnancy care center would not be necessary? Wouldn't that be the ultimate vision, the ultimate goal, right? I had the privilege of studying under Harold O.J. Brown, who's one of the founders of CareNet, back in the 80s. And I studied with him at Trinity Seminary in Chicago in the 90s. And I think that's where I got some of my passion was from him. So that leads me to this. So the presenter model versus the equipper model. I think most pregnancy care centers have what I would call a presenter model. And I'm wanting us to maybe rethink that a little bit and wonder if maybe an equipper model is a better plan. Are we doing the work or are we facilitating the work? And are we utilizing our resources most efficiently? Can we move from addition to multiplication? And what would that look like? And now I want to talk about Collier County Absence Program. But first, before I do that, we'll talk about what Renata's doing down in Naples. I have long encouraged pregnancy care centers to move from presenter to equipper. What do I mean by that? If you're doing presentations at your local school, that's kind of an addition equation. Whereas I think we can multiply our efforts in an equipper model. So what I try to encourage centers to do is, it's great if you've been presenting at a particular school or series of schools, but maybe it's good to think about in terms of transitioning those schools to doing it themselves and moving on to other schools, right? So our model is this. In fact, this call I had from New Mexico, I was on the phone with this lady for quite a while, and she was asking, you know, would there ever be a chance that I could be a presenter for you? And I said, we don't have presenters. We don't hire presenters. Okay. We work directly with centers and schools to train existing school teachers to teach the program themselves. Now, the reason I'm suggesting this is because I spent a lot of times, like I just said last month, I was in Dallas at the Dallas Teacher Convention training a bunch of public school teachers in Texas on how to teach this in their classroom. If I can teach them all of these things and get them using this program, teaching this program, how long will they probably teach that program? For a long time, many years, maybe 20 years. Maybe 30 years. How much does it cost me to do that? It doesn't cost anything. Do you see what I'm talking about? So I'm talking about the efficient use of resources. That if I can equip schools to do it themselves rather than me coming in and doing it for them. Now, I understand the presenter argument, and it's a good one. The presenter argument is that I can do it better because I'm a follower of Jesus, and it's passionate. It's a passion. I get that. I understand that. I do our local school. However, I'm just, again, this is brainstorming. Let's think outside the box. Let's think about ways that we can maybe push and grow and develop. And I think that if pregnancy care centers could be more of an equipping to their, now, where this gets difficult is if you're in a rural area where there's only two schools and the next school is 100 miles away, then not so much. But most of us are within reach of more schools than we're actually reaching now. And so what I'm encouraging us and brainstorming with us is, would there be ways where we could go in, especially schools where we've been in for some time, that we could roll that over to them, help them figure out how to do it for themselves, and then we go on, you know, to the next school, and to the next school, and to the next school. So these are things that I'm wanting to think about. Now, I do want to mention what Renata has been doing down in Collier County, Florida, as an illustration of the kind of thing that I think could work well longer term or, you know, more broadly spread. So in 2004, Collier County began their program as part of the CBAE program. Some of you were involved in the CBAE program. I was involved in the CBAE program. And Collier County began during the CBAE era until it went away. And many people experienced, you know, CBAE went away, oh no. And so what happened there was, as the federal funding for Project Reality Absence Program in Naples was eliminated, there was just a lot of requests. We really want you to keep it going. We really, really like the program. So CCAP raised private funds to continue the programs, and they have continued expanding ever since. Now, here's the thing. I think it's really important for kids to have workbooks, and the challenge there is financial. What they have found and what I find is, and I just spoke at a Pregnancy Care Center banquet in Texas recently, where and then in Augusta too, where what they do is sometimes donors really like to give to a particular project, you know, and they can adopt a school, and you can have a donor cover the cost of this school or that school. there's ways that you can get donors excited about funding a project like this and reach more people than you otherwise would. So what they did is they raised funds privately, and they have gone from, and these numbers probably even need to be updated, I don't know, Renata, but through last year, we were at 91 teachers, 8,800 students in 26 schools. And now we're close to 10,000 students, still about 26 schools, or did we add a couple? Around there? Okay, and you think you've got over 100 teachers. All right. So what they're doing with private funding, and all these kids have workbooks, and they're doing it, they're going through it, and they're in 26 schools, 10,000 kids, over 100 teachers. And we've been doing this now, and I've gone down there a couple of times, and we've been doing this. And it's been fantastic what Renata and Kathleen Sullivan are doing there. And so this is the way that they do it. They implement Quest in sixth grades. I said they kind of mix it up a little bit. Works well. They use the workbooks. They've got a brochure over here you can get and kind of look more at it more. Here's some of their results. Pre-test, post-test, continuing to be sexually active can have consequences. They went from 66 to 83. 670 to 90 in terms of understanding what abstinence is. Look at these jumps. These are big jumps. Still able to choose abstinence in the future. Will help me to accomplish my goals in life. Only 100% effective protection from the possible consequences of sex before marriage. Look at, is that a big jump? That's big. Yeah. Yeah. Now, that's pre-test, post-test data, but what's been remarkable about what we've seen in Collier County, Florida, which is Naples, is that not a research study, but the independent health department data has shown terrific results. It's in that brochure. Grab one of her brochures and you'll see it. I've got just a couple slides up here, but there's more in the brochure. Where, as she mentioned earlier, this county went from 29th in the state to 4th in the state for chlamydia cases. And then now, independent, this is Renata's analysis. Then I went back, Renata, and did my own kind of looking at it and graphed it out. I will say my data is preliminary. I need to do more looking at it. But here's what I found initially when I went after it. The cases of chlamydia, these are all the surrounding counties that Collier was less than half of any other county and considerably lower here. And then with teen pregnancy, you can see the problem with this one is, and I'll just turn that off for a second. Like one of the things in your thing says that we've gone down by over 50%. Well, pregnancy rates across the country are down. I mean, we're at an all-time recorded low in every, you know, all over the place. So it's not such a huge thing to say that we're down 50%, because nationally we're down 50%. However, when I look at comparing Collier with all the other counties, you do see non-marital teen births are down everywhere. But look at Collier. So what I'm suggesting is that maybe we think more of our pregnancy centers as being more proactive than reactive and spend more effort, more resources, more fundraising activity in terms of going out. This is how I got started. I was a pastor who wanted to go do something. I went to my local pregnancy care center, started out doing presentations and classes in the area, and realized I was doing addition. I was like, there's just too many kids. There's too many kids. Not enough time. Pulled back into more of an equipper. I only do our local school just to stay connected, but I don't go around doing presentations anymore. Because why? That's addition. I can't get to enough kids. But by pulling back and equipping and resourcing, we're able to reach a whole lot more kids. I'm wanting you just to think about and brainstorm with your center, what's our best strategy? Is our best strategy to have a presenter or to have an equipper? And to go out and try to get more and more schools to teach it. Does that make sense? So it's just something I'm wanting to throw out there as food for thought in terms of understanding kind of where you are, what you're doing. This is our website, one of our websites here. We've got several websites, and this is one where you can order materials, and this is our ampartnership.org, website, and I was going to put the other one up. I've got another one too, amresources.org, where you can actually go and go through all of the different programs. So, okay, do you want to say a little bit about Collier County? I should let you say something about the program. If I misrepresented or didn't say, you're better to say it than I, but I wanted to give that overview. But what would you say to encourage these folks about, I think what Renata has been able to do and her team and Kathleen Sullivan in Collier County is fantastic. And I'm very excited about it. And I just want you to know about it, you know, and see that as a potential model. So anything I left out or...
I think it's wonderful to have these wonderful resources. And I think the way we've had such success that it's important to So 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th grade. It's taught in the whole class. In Florida, that's the healthy opportunities for through physical education, so it's part of health. And it's required that they teach. If you teach about human sexuality, and it might be in your wherever you live, but in Florida, the statute 1003.46 states that if you teach about human sexuality or AIDS prevention, the school shall teach abstinence as from sexual activity outside of marriage as the expected standard for all school age students while teaching the benefits of a non-heterosexual marriage.
And that is common. I'd say many states have similar statutes.
Now ranked third lowest out of 67 counties for bacterial STD. We had zero gonorrhea reported in 2014 in the AP that we're serving. So the other thing is that the teachers tell us that it's amazing, it's easy to implement, you can work right from the teacher manual, but the online teacher training is definitely a plus. So I would just say we're going to expand.
Yeah, thank you. And we're going to do more with online training. We've got the two programs, but I'm working on getting there to where we've got everything online because I think that's really, you know, really helpful. Yeah, you've seen that to be helpful. Yeah, that is a challenge, obviously.
It's optional. We present it, we offer it to the teachers. We say, if you would like these workbooks for your students, email me, give me the number of students. We want every student to get a workbook, and you just have to go on. If they're not interested in it, then they're probably not going to sign up.
Well, and then the problem right. is, we had something like this. We subcontracted with some groups, but they were using our organization's name, and they... said some pretty questionable things in the classroom, but that was under our name.
Right.
So how do you protect your name?
Well, most of the people don't know where those workbooks came from. They keep your hands and mouth. And so it's part of science in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. They teach about human body, they usually fit it into that lesson. So, and each workbook has 8 lessons.
Well, for parents, yep.
Fire is the best program
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes, good. Thank you. Yeah, I'll take it from here. Thank you, Renata. Very good. Yes, let's give her a wonderful. Thank you, Renata. So a couple things. I want to come back to your question, too, about quality control. So presenters, typically, I think you were asking me about this, too. This is the other thing. If you are an outside presenter, it's more common that you will only get two or three sessions. And it's very common that you get two or three sessions. So it's more difficult to get that classroom time as an outside speaker so that you don't get quite the coverage. Whereas sometimes if the teacher's already in the classroom, they're going to be teaching something anyway, if we can convert what they teach to teach this, there's a greater chance that they're going to get the full program, you know. So it does tend to work that way. So an outside presenter, and outside presenters do use our program, and they just choose which of the few chapters they're going to cover. You know, they just have to limit their material. But coming back to the quality control issue, the workbooks are pretty unassailable. In other words, they're all very well vetted and researched, and there's pretty much, if someone said something wacky, we just say, well, it's not in the book. You know what I mean? So it's not, I mean, so I don't know if, now they were teaching your program, were they teaching something that you had written for them to say, or? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if the school system says to a teacher, hey, you're teaching this,
yeah.
If the teacher doesn't believe this in here,
right.
It's not going to make
sense. Exactly, exactly.
So how do you, I mean, are you comfortable having teachers that don't believe this in here?
No, I've already said that. We'd prefer that you not teach it if you don't believe it. So, you know, like Renata said, it's voluntary. Our program is always voluntary, you know, and the chances are if a school doesn't want to teach it or a teacher doesn't want to teach it, then they're just not going to teach it, you know. So, and you can reserve, but see, it's not typical that a teacher that doesn't want to teach it is going to have you in, although they may.
Oh, that's what we run
yeah,
into.
Yeah.
We run into this where we do get to come in.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they have time, and then afterwards, like you were saying, when parents
get to come in. Right, right. So then what I guess I would say is we're sort of brainstorming this model, what I would be saying is you want to encourage as many schools as want to teach it and can teach it and believe it in here to teach it, and you're going to reserve your valuable presenter time for the schools where only you can teach it. Does that make sense? So that's how I would probably handle that. But let me also say this about SCDs. Oh, let me go to here, and then I'll do this something about SCDs I want to talk about. Yes, go ahead. Yes. That it can work that way. What I do suggest is because most centers are already on a presenter model, so I say use that as a footprint. If you've been in a school for any length of time, they already probably love you. And now you're ready to sort of graduate them onto doing it themselves, right? The teacher's been listening, hearing, and so forth. Right. So So in that case, yes, I think there is a role for presenter as sort of as a footstep into the Equipper model. Yeah, yeah. But, and I love what, you know, and I still want to know more about what's happened, Sunel, and where you've been working, because the results is just fantastic to learn about and so terrific, so. Exactly. I know. It is. It's a luxury. It's a luxury. But it's a luxury that I would argue limits our reach. Does that make sense? So, no, I agree. In fact, it's funny because in Chicago, in the suburban schools, it was tough to get, when I was doing this as a presenter, we would get 3 days in the suburban schools. Chicago public schools would give us 10 days. They're like, come as long as you want. And the teacher would sit over there playing solitaire on the computer. And it's like, woohoo, vacay.
So we kind of loved it because we had a lot of time to talk to these kids. But I'm talking about how do we best utilize our resources most efficiently. I understand that a lot of teachers like to sit back and let you do the work, but the more we can get them to do the work, the better off it is in terms of reaching. Remember, our mission is we want to reach every single kid. How are we doing that? How are we going to do that? I think the only way we do that is if we multiply our efforts as much as possible. Now, Sunil, you do presenter model, right? You do the presentations. Yeah, it's amazing. Now, so how do you react to what I'm saying about equipping and moving, and are there other schools? I'm just curious.
Wow, yeah, see, wonderful. Yeah. That's the thing. And so, of course, again, the equipper model will only work where you can have teachers who want to teach it. But I will say this, there are a lot of teachers who want to teach it. There's a lot of good teachers out there who want to teach this. And all I'm saying is when you find them, give them a push and say, God bless you. We're moving on to where we need to be. So, yeah. Well, that's why you're the equipper then. You step back to be the equipper to where you can provide training or bring me in to do training or something like that. But we want to equip the schools rather than do their work for them.
Yeah.
They literally just, they didn't have time or they did whatever. So we tried that model with, doing the teachers, and now eventually I'm back in volunteering doing it, for that, because the teachers they just absolutely.
Renata, what would you say to that? Because that's kind of your model. I mean, Yeah. There's always going to be some who won't do it, and I guess what I'm trying to say is there's a lot who will. Yeah.
I actually lived in New Jersey. There was when they mandated sex education. Now, this of course was the CSE sex education, but they, when it was mandated, there were a lot of teachers who didn't want to teach it. And so what they did was they gave it every other year.
Yeah.
And they scheduled the teachers who didn't want to teach it in the odd year. So that's how they got around it. The teachers that wanted to teach it were assigned the year that it was given, and the teachers who didn't want to do it were assigned the year that it wasn't given.
Good. Right. And so I guess what I'm saying too is, let's say you have four schools and two of them you feel real good about, you can kind of roll them to do it their own, but two you don't feel good about, roll two over, stay with these two and find two others. I'm just saying let's stretch ourselves to think, how can we more aggressively reach more kids through more efficient multiplication method. That's all I'm trying to get us to think about, Well, yeah. Yeah, that is true. Yeah. All right. Well, hey, listen, very good. You have been wonderful. Am I missing something? Certificates. I was going to print out. I didn't have a roster beforehand to do. I like to pre-print certificates for you. But I didn't have a roster, so how do I do this? You signed up. Did I get your email address on the sign-up things? Because I can email you. Yeah, if I can read it, I can get the info too. Yeah, I want to get you certificates, so I'll have to figure out how to do that. Okay, last thing I will say is this. Oh, you've got an evaluation form. Do they have that, or you need to pass it out? They have it. She wants to remind you to fill out your evaluation forms. Okay. The last thing I want to say is this. Our whole ministry is to equip and to help you, right? That's what I'm trying to say. I started off as a presenter. Now I'm an equipper, trying to get you to maybe consider that as well. But we're here to help you. So call us, email us, whatever. If I can come in, I can do and sometimes I'll do a center banquet thing where we talk about being proactive and reaching kids in the community, pro-life, absence, how these things go together. So lots of different ways that we can work together. I can train your staff. You can bring in school teachers in your area. I can train them. So lots of different ways. So we exist to help you do what you do so well. So thank you very much. Really, really do appreciate you being here.